Genesis 32. Open up there. Now, lots of crazy things have happened to Jacob so far that we're going to see today, but that's just kind of how it is when you're traveling. A lot of times, just crazy stuff happens. In fact, I read about a cat this week who decided the neighbors were moving, and so the cat jumped on board their moving truck and traveled over 1,000 miles with them to like a different state and had to get shipped back home. So that was one example. Another example, I read about a pilot who was flying his single-seater plane over the state of Mississippi, and all of a sudden, he was all by himself, he felt a snake licking his arm right here, just slowly licking his arm. Now, how creepy would that be? You're all by yourself in your own little plane, and all of a sudden you look over, and there's just a snake licking your arm. That would just creep you out, right? Well, this guy flipped out. He couldn't get the snake off of him, so he literally flipped out. And he started making his airplane do backflips and barrel rolls and everything until the snake was so dizzy that it couldn't even like find its way around and ended up just in the back of the plane, I guess with like a snake barf bag or something, you know? Snake was completely disoriented at this point. So that was one example. Another example, I read about some friends, a group of people who went camping, and they were out in the woods. Of course, it was dark, and probably had their fire going. And off to the side, they heard some rustling in the bushes. And so a couple of the guys were like, well, let's go check out what's going on. So they go over there, and it turns out that there had been an old man that had been watching them from the forest, all right? And so they saw this guy running away, so they're like, let's get him. So they take off running, tackle the guy in the forest, bring him back to camp. You know what they do? Call the police and tie him to a tree until the police show up. So they got the guy, you know, if it was me, I probably would have like eaten s'mores in front of him. Like, oh, this is good. You know, flung a flaming marshmallow at him or something. But it's always interesting when you're on the road, when you're traveling. And that's kind of where we meet up with Jacob here in our story in Genesis 32 today, because that's just how his life is. It's an adventure. It's a ride. He's always got something going on. And the amazing thing is that when you follow Christ, your life is going to be an amazing ride as well. Now, it's not always going to be easy. There's going to be some ups and downs. But I can tell you in the long run, it's going to be totally worth it. And so Jacob is on this adventure. And today we're going to see part two of Jacob hit the road as God has told him to head home back to the land that God promised him. And we're going to see some more things that he faces along the journey. And we'll finish this up next weekend with part three. But let me just kind of remind you of where we're at so far. Remember from last chapter, chapter 31, circumstances took a dangerous detour. You remember that. And Laban's sons saw Jacob and all the wealth and the money and the animals that he had, and they started getting really jealous because they said, this guy's gotten all his wealth off of our dad. We don't have any inheritance left. So he started getting really angry. Well, you look down in verse 2, and it says that even Laban, Jacob's father-in-law, wasn't happy either. His countenance was not favorable like it used to have been. And so Jacob sees this. Things are possibly getting dangerous. Well, God tells him to take an emergency exit. He says, Jacob, it's time to get out of here. You need to go home. You need to head out of here and leave. So Jacob, you remember, he has to rig a plan as how he's going to get himself, his four wives, his 12 children, all his servants, and his hundreds of and thousands of animals out quietly. Now, how do you do that? I don't know, but Jacob did it. Laban was away shearing his sheep. Jacob went out as fast as he could, got a three-day lead on Laban. Well, Laban finally found out. So Jacob's on the highway home at that point. He's headed home back to the land that God had told him to go. Well, Laban finds out. And he decides it's time for a reckless roadblock. And so he pursues Jacob. The amount of land, the amount of time that it takes Jacob, you know, it takes him about 2 weeks to cover about 300 miles. Laban covers that in about 1 week. And he catches up to him. And God shows up, though, in a dream to Laban. He says, I'm on Jacob's side. In other words, don't mess, all right? And he says, don't mess with Jacob. So he protects Jacob, and Laban and Jacob make the agreement right there on the mountain. Laban says, I won't come on your side. You don't go on my side. They part ways. That's where we're at now. So Jacob, the next morning, they break camp. They fold up all their tents. They get on the camels, and they start riding out of camp. Well, things aren't exactly going to be easy from here on out, because Laban seemed to be threatening. That seemed like an enemy that he was about to face. But look who Jacob is up against now. Look at verse 3. Then Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, speak thus to my lord Esau. Thus your servant Jacob says, I have dwelt with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, and male and female servants. And I have sent to tell my lord that I may find favor in your sight. Now, think back to Genesis chapter 27. Right before Jacob went on this long road trip to the town of Haran to meet his future wife, Rachel. Do you remember, was Esau, his brother, happy with him? Or was he mad at Jacob when he left? What was it? He was mad at him, right? In fact, Genesis 27, verse 41, he says, when the days of mourning for my father are over, I'm going to kill Jacob. I will kill my brother. So he is so angry that he wants to murder him. That was the last time that Jacob saw Esau. That was the last time they talked. 20 years ago, and Esau wanted to murder Jacob. Well, that was 20 years ago. Surely he's over it by now, right? Look at verse 6. Then the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he also is coming to meet you. So Jacob at that point may be like, oh, great. You know, Esau's coming to meet me. Hopefully we'll work things out. And then they say the end of verse 6, and 400 men are with him. What? 400 men? Okay, now, that's not good. That's what brings us to number 5 here. Jacob faces an angry attacker. Now, it's never good when somebody is coming for you to kill you. I don't think that's ever a good thing. But when they're coming for you to kill you with 400 other guys, that's really bad, right? I mean, I remember Lone Tree. It was bad enough for me when I had hit a bunch of people with water balloons, and then like 10 people came up with water balloons in hand ready to attack me. That was scary enough for me. I can't imagine 400 guys with swords. Hey, what's up? You know, want to play? I got a sword. What do you got? You know? And so Jacob finds out that not only is Esau coming, who he's already scared of all by himself, but he's bringing 400 men with him. So Jacob here, he's following God. Shouldn't his life be easy? But look what's happening. Laban pursued him, caught up to him, gave him a hard time. Then he breaks camp. The next day he finds out Esau's on his way with 400 men. What's happening here? Well, notice what Jacob does. He humbles himself and he honors Esau. Verse 4, he says, my lord Esau, your servant Jacob. He tells the servants, go tell Esau this. My lord Esau, in other words, my master, you're above me, is what he's saying. And then he calls himself Esau's servant. So he humbles himself, he honors Esau. And he tells the servants to tell Esau about all of the animals that he has. Now that sounds like bragging at first, you know? Hey, what's up, Esau? You should know my master, Jacob. He's got like the coolest goats you've ever seen, you know? And it sounds like at first that he's kind of bragging about the amount of animals that this guy has. But I don't think that's what he's doing at all. I think what he's getting at here is our master, Jacob, he has so many animals. He has so much possessions. God has blessed him. He's not going to try to take anything from you. They're trying to make some peace between Jacob and Esau. Well, Jacob starts to freak out. Look at verse 7. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two companies. And he said, if Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the other company, which is left, will escape. Now, I'd probably be freaking out too if my brother who wanted to kill me was coming after me with 400 people. I wouldn't be too happy either. In fact, I remember when I was younger and I'd get in trouble, which was rare because I was such a great child. But, you know, I would get in trouble. You guys know how it is, I'm sure. Actually, you guys probably don't know how it is, but some people get punished, you know, when they're younger because they do bad things. And I know none of you guys do that. So I'll just kind of tell you guys how it was for me. But my dad would say, you know, go to your room. And I'd be like, great, great, you know. So I'd be in my room and there'd be that, like, that minute where he wasn't with me, but I knew what he was doing. He was searching for the wooden spoon that brings pain to my rear end, you know. And it was that minute, that 2 minutes of anticipation, like, oh man, I better enjoy sitting now because I'm not going to be able to do this for a week, you know. And it was that, just, it was terrifying waiting for him to come. Well, think about Jacob here. He's waiting on his brother and the 400 men, and he's not facing punishment. He's facing possible attack and murder is what he believes. Well, thankfully, God has reassured him. We skipped over verses 1 and 2, but look back at them. So Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. Hey, angels, what's up? When Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's camp. And he called the place, the name of that place, Mahanaim. Mahanaim is basically a fancy term which means two hosts. So what he's getting at here is, wow, that's really cool. I've met these angels. I have my host, my family, my animals, but God's host is here too. So Jacob must have been pretty reassured by this, but he's still kind of freaking out here. So he's up against this angry attacker, is what he believes. So what's he going to do? Well, he offers up a pleading prayer. Look at verse 9. Then Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac. And he goes into this long prayer that we'll take apart here in just a moment. But prayer is so important. It easily gets overlooked. In fact, I just got to confess, sometimes I'm guilty of overlooking the power of prayer in my own life. But many of us are. In fact, a lot of people view prayer, and they view God even, kind of like Santa Claus. You know? We'll talk to God when we need something. Same with Santa Claus. We talk to Santa Claus when we need something. We write him a little letter. At least some of you may do that. I don't know if you still do that. But here's the thing. What happens with Santa Claus when it comes to time, January basically through November? Nobody really thinks of the guy. We don't need anything. We'll ask for it in December. And when we need something, we start thinking about it. Same with God for a lot of people. They'll talk to God when they need something, but when everything's good, no need to talk to God. Unfortunately, that's how a lot of people think. Well, Jacob he's at a point right now where he's kind of in the balance between following God, trusting completely in him, and living for himself. He's doing a pretty good job, but he offers up this prayer here, and I want to kind of take it apart and see how it works. Look at verse 9. He says, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family, and I will deal well with you. So the first thing he does, we're going to see three parts of his prayer here. The first thing that he does is remember the promises. He talks to God and he says, God, you're the one who said, return to this land and you're going to deal well with me. He said, you made this promise to me. He starts there. And that's a good thing for us to do too. Start by remembering God's promises. There's many that we can cling to. When you're in a hard time, God's promises bring comfort and peace and joy. Think about it. God's promise, Romans 8:28. All things will work together for the good of those who love him and are the called according to his purpose. So we can cling to that promise and say, God, things are not working out right now, but I know that you're in control. Your word says that all things are working together for my good, so I just want to trust in you. It gives you joy. It gives you peace in the middle of whatever you're going through. Psalm 55:22. says that God will not allow the righteous to be shaken. So when your life is hard and it feels like you're being shaken, you can cling to that promise that God will not allow you to be shaken. There's so many that you can trust in and remember those promises. Jacob reminds himself and he reminds God that God promised to deal well with him. So the second part is that he recognizes the blessings. Look at verse 10. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant. For I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I have become two companies. Think about it. 20 years ago, here he is, he's praying, and 20 years ago he remembers back, man, when I crossed over this river, all I had was like a walking stick. It was a dried up tree branch. That's all I had. And he says, man, look at me now. God, I am not worthy of everything you've done. I've already divided my family and my animals into two groups. 20 years ago, I just had a tree branch. That's all I had. God, you are so good. And so he recognizes the blessings and that God has done it for him. The third thing that he does is he requests deliverance. Verse 11, deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. So Jacob's fearful for himself, but also for his family. He's scared that Esau is going to attack and just annihilate everybody there. And so here he is. And I find it pretty amazing how the Bible fits together. Because this guy Jacob, he was born probably about 1800 BC, almost 2,000 years before Jesus would come to the earth. About the same time Jesus was born, another guy by the name of Saul was born. Later on, we would know him in the New Testament as Paul, Paul the Apostle. And he wrote a good portion, almost half of the New Testament. And so Paul and Jacob, they lived almost 2,000 years apart. And yet Jacob prayed very similarly to how Paul later on would write and tell the Philippian church how to pray. Philippians 4:6, Paul says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. So remember, Jacob remembered the promises. And Paul starts out by saying, be anxious for nothing. Isn't it cool that when we can cling to God's promises, we have nothing to worry about? We have no need to be anxious for anything. So Paul says, be anxious for nothing. Jacob also recognized the blessings. And Paul says, in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. In other words, be thankful for what God has done for you, all that he's given for you. And then Jacob requested deliverance. And Paul says, let your request be made known to God. Amazing how God's word fits together. And here's the cool thing. Here's the result of praying that way. Philippians 4:7 says, and the peace of God which surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. In other words, if you pray and you remember and you recognize and you request the deliverance from God and you're thankful for what you have, God is going to give you peace that you can't even understand. God's going to give you peace that you can understand it did not come from you. There's no way. So that's how great this is. Well, Jacob, he's done his best now. Think about it. He's freaking out a little bit. Esau's approaching. So he's divided his family up. He says, well, you know, this way, if Esau attacks group number two, man, stinks for them, but group number one's okay. If he attacks group number one, stinks for them, but group number two's okay. At least half of the family will survive. So he's done his best. I've heard a saying, and it always sticks in my mind. It goes, do your best and let God do the rest. And I think that's so important for us because we should do our best in everything that we do. But there's a lot of times in life, just like Jacob, that we feel like the circumstances we're up against are completely impossible. In fact, a lot of times, they are. And so we need to give our best. And when we give our best, God is faithful to do the rest. He'll always be there. So Jacob prepares to face Esau. Look at verse 13. So he lodged there that same night and took what came to his hand as a present for Esau, his brother. So he's there at night. They set up camp. And he says, okay, I'm going to get together a gift for my brother Esau. I'm sure his wives were like, oh, great idea, honey. I have a basket. We could make like a little flower arrangement and put some teas and some lotions, you know, in the basket. Jacob's like, no. That's not what I'm talking about. Look at the gift that he gives to his brother. Verse 14, 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 foals. Whoa. This is almost 600 animals that this guy gives to his brother. Now, I remember when I was younger, one of our friends gave us two dogs. And it was great. We got them as puppies, and we raised them, and it was fun. But that was two dogs, okay? Two. Now, imagine if they were like, hey, yeah, we brought these two dogs, and out in the trailer, we have 598 more for you. 600 dogs. Can you imagine? No way, right? Well, with Jacob here, he doesn't want to spare any cost. He says, man, I don't care what it costs me. I want to make peace with my brother. And so he gathers all these animals. And here's what he does. He sends them out in groups with a servant, one at a time, with, you know, maybe a couple hours in between them. So he's like, all right, camels, go with the servant. So they head toward Esau. They finally get to where Esau's at. Esau says, hey, those are great looking camels. Servant's like, oh yeah, well, these are your servant Jacob's, and he's giving them to you as a gift. Esau's like, well, great. I needed some camels, you know? So he keeps the camels. The servant returns home. Well, couple hours later, here come the goats. And Esau's like, man, I was eyeing those goats over there. Some nice looking goats. And the servant's like, well, those are your goats. This is a gift to you from your servant Jacob. Really? Wow, this is like my birthday. All kinds of presents today. Great. Tell Jacob thanks. So he gets the goats. Well, here comes the cows and the bulls. Esau's like, man, those are some nice bulls. I was trying to start a rodeo. I've got the clowns, but I didn't have the bulls. And, you know, man, those are great. How much can I buy those for? And they're like, man, this is a gift from your servant Jacob. So five or six different times a herd of animals shows up. And they give them to Esau as a gift. So Jacob's doing his best here to make peace with his brother. Romans chapter 12 talks about the importance of this. And it says that we should be at peace with all men as much as it depends on us. As much as we can be faithful and be kind and make peace with others, we should do it. Now, they're not always going to be peaceful to us, but we should always be peaceful to them. So Jacob here, he's facing what he believes to be an angry attacker. He offers up this pleading prayer. Well, Jacob decides that he's going to get ready for the morning. Skip ahead to verse 22. And he arose that night and took his two wives, his two female servants, his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. And he took them, sent them over the brook, and sent over what he had. Can you imagine this? They're out in the middle of the wilderness. It's pitch black, the middle of the night. Jacob's probably so nervous about meeting Esau the next morning that he can't even sleep. So in the middle of the night, he wakes all his family up, gets all the animals, and they cross the river in the middle of the night. Can you imagine if that happened? Hey, wake up. Your dad wakes you up. It's 2 a.m. Let's cross the river, Rio Grande. Get going. You're like, Dad, I'm going to school tomorrow. I'm still in my PJs. I don't care. March. Let's go. So Jacob gets them up. They gather up their tents in the middle of the night. They cross the river. And they cross this little stream called Jabbok. Now that's an interesting place to stop. Because Jabbok means wrestler. Look at verse 24. Then Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. Number 7, an overnight opponent. An overnight opponent. Now, think about this. Jacob is alone. It's dark. They don't have street lights. They don't have spotlights. They have the moon and the stars. It's dark in the middle of the desert. Out of nowhere, a hand grabs Jacob and they start wrestling. Jacob's all by himself. He has sent his family ahead. He's all by himself, it says, by this little stream called Jabbok. And a guy shows up and starts wrestling. What in the world? Like, that's not the normal way to meet somebody. Hey, what's up? Want to wrestle? Now, for some of you, you may do that. But it's not the best way to try to meet somebody. So what's going on here? Verse 25. Now he saw that he did not prevail against him. In other words, the guy wrestling with Jacob did not prevail against Jacob. He touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. So this guy dislocates his hip. Jacob, as he's wrestling, can you imagine trying to continue to wrestle with a dislocated hip? That's not good. So in the middle of the desert, this wrestler comes to Jacob. I guess if we were reading a Spanish Bible, it would be, you know, a luchador showed up to wrestle. So what's happening here? How is this, you know, let's kind of get this picture. Now, a lot of people say, well, this was more of a dream or an allegory of kind of what's going on in Jacob's mind and the conflict and the struggle. Not exactly. Because last time I had a dream and there was some kind of physical activity involved, I didn't wake up sore the next morning from that. You don't do that. When you're dreaming, you're just dreaming. It's not really happening. Well, look at verse 31. Just as he crossed over Peniel, the sun rose on him and he limped on his hip. So this is a real thing that took place. He's actually wrestling in the desert. But who is this opponent that he's wrestling? Who was this guy? Why did he just show up in the middle of the night? What's happening here? Well, Hosea chapter 12, verse 4. Later on, Hosea is a prophet sent by God to his people. And God speaking through Hosea is speaking about Jacob. And he says, he's talking about Jacob. He says that in the womb, Jacob was holding on to his brother's heel, Esau. You may remember that from earlier in Genesis. But he goes on and he says that Jacob was wrestling the angel. He wrestled the angel. Now, it's also interesting that it says he was wrestling the angel. Not an angel, not just one of them out there somewhere. He was wrestling the angel. Now, that's kind of interesting because we know that God is capable of taking on human form at times. In fact, we read earlier in Genesis 18 that he did that with two angels. He showed up with Abraham. The two angels left, and we found out later on that this was God in human form. So God's capable of doing this. So this is God now that Jacob is wrestling. Not just an angel, but for hours and hours, they're wrestling. It says until morning, they're wrestling. But notice verse 24. It says that a man wrestled with him. It doesn't say Jacob wrestled with the man. It says that the man wrestled with Jacob. And so a lot of people would interpret this passage by saying, well, we can learn a lot from this because this will teach us how to be persistent in our prayers and wrestling with God. And yeah, that's nice and all. And you can learn a lot about being persistent in prayer. God talks about that. But I don't think that's what this passage is getting at here. Because it says that the man wrestled with Jacob. In other words, this man sought out Jacob to wrestle with him. And if this is God, God is his opponent in this. So what's going on here? Well, you know what? Sometimes God has to do this to get our attention. Sometimes God has to, kind of like he did here, dislocate our plans to get us on the path where we should be. He kind of has to knock our plans out of socket to get us focused on him. And I hope that none of us would be guilty of being that person that's so stubborn in our own ways that God has to do this. Well, finally, Jacob submits and he recognizes his need. Verse 26, and he said, this is the angel speaking, let me go for the day breaks. But he said, speaking of Jacob, I will not let you go until you bless me. So he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. Now, this is God. He knows Jacob's name. He doesn't have to ask. But I think he wanted Jacob to say his name. Because back in the Bible times, Jacob, the name Jacob wasn't exactly a name that you wanted to have. Now, in our day and age, it's a great name. But back in the Bible, not so much. It meant a person who takes someone else's position by force. Or cheater, basically. So this guy, he's wrestling. Jacob says, I'm not letting go until you bless me. He recognizes his need for this guy to bless him, for God to bless him. And he says, what's your name? And Jacob's like, well, my name means cheater. Sorry. Name means cheater. And it's interesting what he says, verse 28. And he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, or cheater, but Israel. For you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed. So his name just got changed to Israel, which basically means a prince with God or God wins. So Jacob just went from his name meaning I win by cheating to God wins. Isn't that interesting? And so God has forced him into this place where he recognizes his need for submission, his need for God. He asks for this blessing, and God changes his life. So in the morning, he talks to his family. He hasn't slept all night. He's limping. But at this point, he's probably so encouraged by this blessing he's received from God. Here's the challenge. Here's what I want you to catch. How long, or what is it going to take for you to understand that God's plan is the best plan for your life? What's it going to take for you to understand you need to submit your life to God? Jacob, it took some pretty hard circumstances in his life for him to understand it. Is that what it's going to take for you? Are you going to make God force you into that place? Now, it's interesting because he never forced Jacob to follow him. But he wrestled with him until Jacob understood that he knew he needed God. And then Jacob came to a place where he asked God for that blessing. God's not going to force it. But a lot of times he will put you through some pretty hard circumstances to help you to realize your need for him. Are you going to be that person that's so stubborn in your own ways that you'll make God put you through those kind of things? Or are you willing today to turn your life to Jesus? He's the only way to get to heaven. The Bible makes that very clear. So what's it going to be? When are you going to give in? When are you going to surrender? Jesus is the only way to get to heaven. And if you don't have a relationship with Jesus, you're not going to heaven. But today doesn't have to end on that note. You can give your life to Jesus today, and you can trust that he's going to be with you through the end, through the hard times, through the good times. He's always going to be there. Let's pray. God, we just ask, Lord, that you would give us your wisdom, your guidance, and your grace to face the things that we're up against, to face opposition, to face family problems like Jacob was up against. So many things that we're up against, Lord, as we follow you. And so, God, I pray for every student in this room. They would understand their need for you. They would not be so stubborn in their ways that you would have to put them through something to help them understand. But God, take us through it. Help us to trust in you the whole time. In your name we pray. Amen. If you guys need prayer, to talk to a leader, we'll be up here.